Hello there, and welcome to the No Script Show. In our last episode called Trap or Trade-Off, What Small Businesses Should Know Before Getting a Website, we used the example of a local plumber to highlight that the web is for everyone. We showed that businesses don't always need to get locked into maintenance costs and restrictions of a third-party platform. Often, the only technology needed for an effective online presence is HTML and CSS, which can be learned relatively quickly. However, businesses also have to persuade visitors that their services are what searchers are looking for. And to do this, they need a credible brand identity too. So in this episode, we're discussing brand style guides. These long predate the web, and here we're looking at how these could be best updated for web projects. You can find the show notes and the resources for this show at the website, which is noscript.show/29, the numbers 2 and 9. And if you're watching this on YouTube, the link will be inside the first comment, just below the subscribe and like buttons. Hint, hint. As always, I am joined by David Walmsley. Hello, David.
Hi, Nathan. So the last time we spoke, which is about a month ago, I thought I had it planned out what we were going to do for this episode. I was going to go ahead and create this brand guide. And it should have been straightforward because what we've been using for our presentations, we've been using Canva. And Canva's got a whole range of these brand guidelines, which you could just kind of edit. So I thought we'd make one for Paul, our plumber, and his one-page site will turn into something bigger. But instead, because I hinted at it last time, it's the fact that these style guides go back a long way. You know, generally, they're a sort of document of the visuals that you'll need for your brand and not so much for the web. So as I started adding in things that I thought were relevant to the web, it kind of took me right back 20 years to when I first started doing web design.
Oh, nice.
It did, really. And at the time, you know, I used to listen to Paul Boag.
Yes.
Boag World,
podcast.
It was the only one that was available for people who were interested in making websites.
And, he was blazing a trail back then, wasn't he? Really was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it kind of reminded me, and that's what we've called this episode, the making of the Website Owner's Manual. This was a book that Paul did back in, I think, 2010, which is now available for free, actually. We'll move on. There's a link, actually, where you can just get that book. But he was trying to solve this problem, which actually, at the time, I loved making websites and all the stuff that was involved. I loved that show. But what I didn't like is hearing all the stuff, all the friction that people used to have with the designer and the client who didn't necessarily understand the web the way that the designer would. And his solution was this website owner's manual. So I thought, as we're quite keen to the idea that we have a sort of transparent setup, you know, something where people who want to go independent can, say a business like Paul, that's what we covered last time, could make his own website. We really wanted something that would be similar to that in the sense that the website owner would need to know what they're doing. So basically what's happened is that I've gone completely off this sort of very simple design identity thing and turned it into a sort of a living document, if you like. It's carrying on, if you like, what I think Paul was trying to do with his book, which I don't think works so much because of the fact that it, well, like his podcast, it wasn't hitting the people that he expected it to hit,
which is,
you know, people who wanted to build their websites. It would be more for designers. So, and, you know, that's logical because no one's going to read a book before they start to get on with their actual work. So,
right.
So anyway, so what I tried to do, sorry, I'll get on to the point, is that I wanted to show you what I've started so far, because there's a lot of work, and what I'm hoping you'll do, and if somebody's kind enough to watch this and give comments, I'd love feedback, because this is obviously something that I make available to anyone. But if I'm on the right track, this would be the way that I think would start every website.
Yeah, I confess, when you'd made it and sent it over to me, I was quite surprised by how in-depth this working document is. I think currently it's on about 50 pages or something like that, and it covers a whole smorgasbord of different topics. I guess I should probably pop it on the screen so that we can see where we are. We're inside of Canva, like David said. This is where it's being designed. And you presumably, I think I said in the beginning there, there will be links to the resources and different ways to get it and what have you. But yeah, here we are, the website owner's manual, I guess page one.
Yeah.
We're currently looking at the editing view, David. Is that what you're desiring?
I think we have to do, because what I've done with this one, so I don't know if you can read this, Nathan, at all, whether it's
possible
and whether our audience can, to see what I'm doing.
Yeah, so you basically can see the notes. Yeah, they're quite clear on the screen. I can read them out if you like, but they are very clear on the screen there.
Yeah, so what we'll concentrate on with this, we haven't talked about this at all, so we're just diving in as it comes up, but what I've done is I've set out a whole bunch of these slides on a Canva presentation. Now, the idea I had for this, because I don't like the idea of just promoting, you know, one product out there, which is Canva. I mean, it's wonderful, but I wanted this to be platform agnostic. So we're using it here, and I've put it in our notes, because if you make something on Canva, you can save it as a PTTX document.
Yeah,
you can use PowerPoint. Or if you want open source, you can use LibreOffice. But what's great about it is if you use this, you've got a kind of a way to be able to, particularly if you're on the pro version of Canva, you've got a way of getting all these assets and everything to bring them into your presentation, the sort of things that you're going to use on a website.
Yeah.
And it allows for real-time collaboration. So if, say, I would use it if I was working with a client to go through the steps in this and then use it as a way that they can add in certain things that they wanted to add in themselves and make changes and comment on it. So you've got a commenting setup and live collaboration if you want on something like this. And it also has, and I'll just go to that, it has a whiteboard option view where you can do this. So this is where I'm messing around and storing stuff for Paul's site when we get around to making it proper. So it's
great. See, it's kind of atomizing the bits inside the linear presentation with page numbers, and you can pop those assets into different scenarios, if you like. So in this case, structure, mood board, photos, and what have you. You can pilfer those and pop them into different contexts. That's actually really cool, isn't it? So it's recycling the same content in different ways, which might be easier to understand. Not everybody's going to want to go through the entire 50-pager, are they, and read all the words. That's really good.
It was just a sort of, you need a, I think, because no project runs in a sort of logical order, you'll probably, you know, when you're trying to fill in, the idea of this manual is that you fill in all of the things that you'll need to have for your website. So it will be this style guide, which you'll use offline and online, which will tell you how your business, what its tone of voice is, what it stands for, what assets it uses, and the style of those assets. But in order to get there, in some ways, and that's what Canva has, it has a presentation, which we're seeing here. And then it also has, a little bit like Figma, it has a whiteboard. So all I need to do is to link to this. And this is just a place where I can just zoom into any bit. You know, and play around with some design ideas, which I'm doing here, a dark and a light mode.
Right. That's nice, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, and then you could just store some of your photos that you might want for some of this, and other things like structure when I'm trying to work out the structure of this site.
Yeah.
And of course, what you could do is, you know, mess around in here and have all the assets in one place, and then you can take that, and once you're happy with it, then you can start to put it into the style guide or the manual, as we've called it here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. That's a nice repurposing of all of those different bits and pieces. And I think the website owner's manual is going to be, like you said, like a working document. You're going to be going through it and making sure that all of the boxes are ticked. But the bit that you just showed us, that whiteboard approach, that's kind of like a nice first pass. It just gives you an idea of, I don't know, is this color palette suitable for you? Do you like, generally speaking, do you like the layout of these pages? And does this structure of the website look right to you? Yeah, it's nice, really visual. And I suspect that more or less anybody online these days would be able to parse that information. You know, these kind of interfaces are really normal now, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that's it. It's just like Figma, where it's got an open whiteboard. You need a sort of fiddle document when you're messing around with you.
Yeah.
I'll chuck a load of things in there so that look nice, and then I'll commit to it later in the manual. Mm-hmm. And I've got another link here. So for those who are listening, this may be very difficult to understand, but what you're seeing is a slide, and it says the website owner's manual. It's a customizable guide for creating an effective brand guide. And then supporting resources is the link within Canva that goes to the whiteboard. And there's also a link, and of course you could use something else, which I've got going to a Google document. And what's quite nice about Google documents now is, because when you get to your sort of content that's going into your web page, you probably want to get your page structure. So you've got the tabs where you can line those up, which I've done here. And then you could start to put in the different sections that you're likely to have on each of these pages and go ahead with that. So I've started doing something like that.
Is there any reason that you've gone for a Google Doc over embedding that same information inside of Canva? Is it just a superior sort of text interface, I suppose, with...
I just felt, I mean, you could do it within Canva because, of course, it works. It also has a sort of docs area as well, so it sort of works.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the tab in, though.
Okay. So, and the tabbing being that column on the left in a Google Doc whereby you can
put
headers and, you know, H2s and H3s, you can organize the document and click through to it. If you're just dwelling on text, it's a superior interface, isn't it? There's just no clutter, nothing's getting in the way. And okay. But nice to see that Canva supports the ability to link outside of itself to other things as well. So although it's obviously in a different space, it's there. You can link to it directly. Okay, great.
That would be the idea. And then I've just put this in as a bit of a preface. This, if someone's coming to this for the first time, I don't know if you can read that out because it's actually quite
strange. Yeah. Do you mean read what's in the notes or read what's on the screen?
Oh, on the screen, please.
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah. So the Website Owner's Manual is a project management tool, a collaborative hub for strategic planning and brand assets. Like Paul Boag's book, which I guess is a link there as well, of the same name, it aims to give owners control over the legal, technical, and business responsibilities that they inherit with website ownership. It encourages independence and inclusive design through web standards, agile development, and the indie web. Again, links are provided in there.
Yeah, and the links for the moment, which you probably haven't seen, they are put on our site for the moment. So we might actually do an episode talking about each of these things, agile development.
Agile and web standards. That's good.
That's a link really, which is, I've just taken the same format here where you explain what that means and why it matters and the core principles that you would follow and why website owners might want to apply this. And it's the same with agile as well. So everything from this owner's manual has got a link going out to something where it needs some greater explanation.
Okay.
And I've put some principles on the side of this as well as the sort of introduction to this, is that this probably needs some work, but principles are business ones that we tackle problems before product. We don't say, I want a website. We want a website because it's obviously, we're not getting enough business. You know, we always do it that kind of way. Justifications before dependencies. So instead of jumping on the heavier software that will get us a website, we will justify what we need in terms of technology so we don't have to, you know, support dependencies that we didn't need to. Local skills before global, this is my own brand, corporate platforms, and that we should try and contain our website to if you like, localized skills rather than have a dependency on people millions of miles away.
Yeah.
And that we, you know, favor simplicity before automation on things. So often, I'll get clients come to me who want something that's automated. And then if you really drill down, they would have been better just keeping it simple in the first place. And the automation actually makes things so complex that they can't manage it. So I've put that in terms of design content before design, meaning that you get your words and then you design around that first. Users' needs before designers or stakeholders' ego. So it stops being an art project. Objectives before personal taste. And for the web, it would have some general views about fluid before fixed units, mobile before desktop, semantics before styling, performance before bloat, and accessibility before complexity. So
there's a lot there, but
there is a lot there. So it's really just trying to set some standards, if you like, which I think are standards that we all hold to, but we just very easily lose them if we don't bake them in at the beginning of our projects.
Okay. And I guess you're just sort of setting the groundwork a little bit, aren't you? These are the kind of things that are going to come later, but they're worth thinking about at the start. So laying the groundwork. Yeah.
And I've put it again in notes here. I mean, designers might kind of want to use this whole thing or the next level of, if you like, the higher level navigation, which we're going to work through here, to remind clients of the unique features of the web and of their responsibilities for having a website, and also to head off the potential friction that you can kind of get. So for example on that, and I've just put this in notes, it makes it easier to see by going through this process, see when a platform's needed, rather than picking a platform for the client and then subsequently having to justify it. Just on that point, it's probably worth mentioning there is another website owner's manual. I've stolen Paul Boag's name, but there is another one from someone we know as well in the WordPress space. And in some ways, that's what theirs does, isn't it? That it's a document to give to website owners to explain the work that goes into maintaining something like WordPress. Mm-hmm. So if you like, this one is a slightly different thing in the fact that it would try and avoid... you wouldn't need something like that anyway, because you would already decide with the client whether WordPress was the most suitable thing for that project.
That was your second point under business principles, wasn't it? Justification before dependencies.
If
WordPress isn't the right thing, then that's not the right thing.
And that's always been the thing that's sticking with me. I mean, for me, it was fine because I came in as somebody who did WordPress, so everybody got WordPress. But of course, the person bringing the clients to me hadn't necessarily gone through the process of whether they needed to be managing WordPress for the job that they had. It wasn't covered. Also, going through the process here would provide the tools to clients to be able to assess other people's sites. So it avoids, because this is often, I think you'll know that a lot of people come to a designer saying, I've seen this on a website and I would like that on my website, this navigation, this slider, this bar. And I think this is always a problem, because then you end up with a situation where you might know that this isn't in their best interest. This isn't good for usability. It might not help them to achieve what they want to achieve. So by letting the client go through this kind of thing, there's less likelihood that they will come up with bad ideas, which you'll have to correct them on, which creates friction, or that you'll have to get into criticizing another website. So it's to head off that.
It feels that although this is, we're still on the preface, aren't we? There's a lot of conversation to be had here, just laying out the groundworks kind of before anything starts.
These are the notes in a way, if you were a designer, I suppose, what's the benefits of going through this approach?
On this one. Yeah.
Also, going through this approach from the beginning to the end, and I expect if you were a designer showing this to a client, you could do it in a very quick conversation. You'd go through 10 slides to know you're on the same in the same place. But I think it positions designers problem solving to avoid that kind of problem that you often end up with, where a project turns into some community art project, you know, where everybody's saying, what do you think of this? What do you know? It gets it back to the science of it. And I think it just... by going through a process like this, it reduces that need for these torturous contracts that people often set up because they've been burned by clients wanting to change things at the last minute and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And around that.
Okay. That's an interesting position of it as well. Okay.
Okay.
So moving on, I guess, we're on the next one.
Right. Yeah. So I'll move on. So we've got a table of contents, and this is the higher level of how this kind of document is structured. And I've tried to structure this into different sections. So table of contents has got this sort of first section, which is the content, which is really the mission and message, which we convert into semantic HTML, so it makes the web accessible to all people and devices, which other mediums can't do. And then on that, so it's going in order. You would start with that when you're starting your project, what your mission is. Then you would move into styling, which is the visual design that objectively improves the usability of the content and forges an emotional connection with the target audience. So that would be the next level. Then we'll be looking at technology, what's necessary to deliver the message. You know, so you want to start with the rule of least power to reduce unnecessary lock-in and maintenance. And then finally, and there needs to be a section, I think, which is covering progress. So you need to plan for the fact that the web is constantly changing, businesses change as well. So there's inevitable change here, and you need a way to be able to evolve, ideally in an agile way where you're incrementally improving all the time.
Yeah, nice.
So what's happened here is that if I just bring this up here, again, people who are listening to this might find it a bit difficult, but on that sort of content, table of contents lays out these different sections, and here you can link to
these are links.
Different areas. Yes.
So that's an internal link with inside this Canva board. You can just sort of shuffle backwards and forwards.
Exactly. I can go back here.
What that arrow's for. Okay. It's a nice, like a bit of graphic, but it's not. It's actually a link. Okay.
It's a link back. So the idea is that, so if I was going through this, how I imagine I'm going to go through this as a designer, I'd just say, oh, let's start your project. Let's go through the things you need to do. We need to start with your content, what you're trying to achieve here, what's your brand, what's its message, and then we would go through that first one, which would be the foundations and strategy, who you are, why should anyone care. And there are different sections. Nathan, you're much better at reading. Do you want to read out what's...
Yeah, I can read them out. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, sure. So we've clicked the first link in that table of contents document, and we've ended up at foundation and strategy. And this is the who are you and why should anyone care piece. And it's broken up into five different sections, the first of which is brand, purpose, and vision. So why the business exists, emotions it invokes, core values and aims, then moving on target audience. Who are the personas, the demographics? What is the visitor behavior and what are the challenges they may present? Market position and statement comes next. Where you sit and what you stand for, which is in effect your elevator pitch. Two final ones, competitor analysis. And in this, we're looking at competitors' strengths and weaknesses, that sort of SWOT thing that everybody does. Differentiation opportunities, how you can stand out. And then finally, more towards the website itself, SEO stuff, sanity checking, achievable traffic. Yeah. Oh, Lord. Content, no, bring it, build it and they will come, David. That's all you need. Content gaps, keyword competition, search intent, and EAT, EEAT, which yeah. I actually have forgotten. What's that?
Well, it used to be just EAT with the one E. So it's, I think it's experience, expertise, I forgot what the A is. And anyway, it's all the stuff.
Quickly moving on.
It's what Google check. I should write it out in full. It's what Google uses. Authority is the A.
There you go. That's it. That's what I remember.
And trust or something like
there
that
you
for
go.
The T.
Yeah.
It's all about whether you're a legit business and you show yourself to be somebody very serious. It's a key thing that Google are always looking into, whether there are signals out there that you are a serious business so they can rank you higher rather than somebody, particularly if you're doing something which is professional. If it's medical advice, they'll definitely want to see lots of the expertise, some background before they'll favor you. So there's that. So again, with each of these, this is the idea. This is where you end up with so many pages. So if I click on any of these individual subcategories, like the first one being brand purpose vision, then it will take you into...
Yep. Being that. Moved over, right, got it. Okay.
We won't cover that because that's where I'll put all the sort of tips and that's where you'll write in what they are. So that's the bit that we'll complete. This is just the overview. So that's the idea of foundations here. So hopefully you'll go through this and you'll get an idea about where they position themselves, what is their elevator pitch. With each of these, there are little, you know, ways of being able to do that. There are sort of statements you can create which somebody can pre-fill in. So, you know, you are... for a certain type of business, you are your name and your brand is a whatever it is.
And it's almost like magic tags in an email system, isn't it? You can substitute the correct phrasing and hopefully something sensible pops out. Yeah.
So the idea is when you go through this, you give them all the tools that are around. There are loads of them for people who do this that help people to try and come up with their own brand purpose. Because I think if I just go back, let me just come out of this. I just go into the notes here. I think I put something on that.
Shall I just read those out? Because
actually, I'll go back. Yeah, okay. I'll just go. Is that the one I'm on? Yes, that one. Yes, please.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the foundation and strategy document, and it says the following. This is often the hardest part. Creating a brand requires introspection, and in many businesses, many in business are people of action who employ their gut to adapt to situations. Online, we have to define upfront a purpose and target audience to cut through the noise and avoid being for no one in particular. Online customers can't meet you first, so your brand identity has to act as your actual digital handshake. And on the plus side, this can act as a useful North Star for general business decisions and reduce the need to compete solely on price. I guess as we come later to Paul the plumber, that's a fairly straightforward proposition, isn't it? You know, the narrative around what do you do is pretty straightforward. But in more complicated situations where your business isn't maybe quite as obvious as that, or you've got some strange niche within a niche, then this kind of stuff starts to matter more and more. You've got to cut through the noise and make sure that it's clear what you do and that you're trustworthy and reliable and what have you.
Yeah, and I think it's quite interesting because I started to do the exercises and I'll finish this off with Paul properly, but you start to get, even when you get to target audience, you think, oh, well, that's just anywhere in Lincolnshire. He's a local plumber and he does these particular areas. But when you start to dig into it, you start to think about, actually, you know, who are the people that really come? Well, it tends to, the job of calling in the plumber tends to fall more on women. And when you look at it, he's got a particular range of women, generally they'll be over 30 and generally householders, but he's also got other people as well that he deals with because he's dealing with landlords as well. So it's quite interesting how you start to get into it, and even though it seems straightforward and you think it's everybody in that area, actually it's not, and they've got characteristics.
Yeah. So I've got you are not living in the UK at the minute, but you'll know this problem. So I've got a perfect example of where this goes wrong. And that is, for example, if I did a Google search for, let's say where I live, Yorkshire plumber, what I know will happen is the first set of SERP results will be some content farm that is probably based out of, I don't know, the southeast of the UK. And they're a call center for plumbers, basically.
Yes.
And you go there and it's pretty obvious that this landing page, which where the word Yorkshire appears, is just some dynamic data that's been inserted in. It's probably an identical page for Lancashire and Wales and Northumbria and whatever.
Yes.
And but yet they win the SEO battle. But the minute I see that generic nonsense, it's like next. There's no depth to it. There's absolutely no credibility to it. You know that the person that's going to come has no interest in the area. They're probably going to have to drive miles. You're just a data point to them. You're not going to be somebody that you can build a relationship with and have Paul the plumber's phone number actually as a contact in your phone so that you can call him up at 3 a.m. when the tap suddenly bursts open. That's kind of an example of where this sort of stuff really trumps the sort of, I don't know, the automated promise of what the web can bring. We've got a web page, but we don't look trustworthy.
Yes.
Presumably it still works. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think we'll come back to Paul in this site at a later point so I can go into some of these things, because there is some quite interesting thing about what SEO strategists say about plumbing websites, which I just suggest we don't do, but it's another conversation.
Okay.
I'll move on with the next slide that was here. So the next thing, which is in our content section on the higher level, is defining the content and voice guidelines. So basically, how do you communicate So there are, I'll read these out, but there are three sections on this. Each have got their own page, which is brand voice, which is your tone, your language style, and personality. So there are tools again, which we'll go into later as I fill this out, on how to come up with that. But often with that kind of thing, in fact, let me just go to link so I can just cover that quickly. Just come out here. I think I might have done some of this, filled it in already for Paul. Yeah, so, I mean, there are a few tips on how to do that that I put in the slide. So if somebody has to fill that in, there are tips on how you find your brand voice. You know, you can imagine your brand as a person, in this case, personable, like Chris Packham, the eco broadcaster.
Yeah.
Am I out? Yep. And I mean, there are different adjectives you can use as well to define yourself. You can use the this but not that way of being, you know, professional but not stuffy, funny but not mean, as a way of trying to get to your character.
Yeah.
Read reviews. That's often what a lot of copywriters say. Use the words that people use to describe you is a good way of getting your brand there, and creating a do's and don'ts list of what sort of things you would say and wouldn't say. So let me just go back.
It's an interesting world for Paul, isn't it? Because he's got to sort of step into a world which I'm imagining is very unfamiliar to him. You know, if you're a, I don't know, if you're a financial institution, you've got a marketing team, presumably the people on the marketing team are really savvy with this kind of stuff. But having that conversation with Paul, I think it's going to be weird. It's for a little while. It's going to be really trying to drag Paul through the hoops here. I imagine there'll be a little bit, you know, not resentment towards it, but do we really need to do this? Can't we just build a website?
I know.
No.
And I think that's the, but in a way, I this should be a checklist, I think. If your clients can't do that, you can skip over it. You say, well, shall I fill that in for you from what I know of you? And you tell me if it's wrong.
Okay, that's an interesting position as well, isn't it? Is you, in effect, are being the helpful voice of reason. It's not like, okay, unless Paul does all of this, this document needs to go in the bin. That's where your professionalism drops in. I mean, you know what a plumber does. There's really not much of that industry which is disguised and unfamiliar to you. So you really could, right? But I guess if it's some industry that you've never heard of, you know, X company is making widgets, which they sell to this entire industry that you've never heard of, maybe not so much. But for Paul, do you know what? I think that's a bit of a value add as well. I think if you can show this to Paul and persuade Paul that, you know what, I can do some of the heavy lifting here. I've done this before. That's quite nice. Probably reassures Paul that you're credible as well.
Yeah, and I think just going through that, you know, it's like anything. If you have to come in and you've got a whole bunch which is on the individual pages of how you can get this information out to people, I think this is just a way. But it's really about making sure that you haven't missed something along the way and that you're logically building up the website. So,
yeah,
I mean, my little note on this whole section, if you like, brand voice, writing guidelines and that, is the fact that people buy from people. So we have to cut through the impersonal nature of the web, and this isn't creative writing, but it's reputation control, because people, when they go to your website, so when people go to Paul's website, that should reflect his voice. So when he turns up with his spanners, they're not surprised because he's completely different to what they expected, you know.
You know what, that's exactly it. That encapsulates it in a nutshell. That SEO farm that I talked about, which you know, you land on the page and it's got the word Yorkshire, but it's also got some sort of generic stock photo of the area in which I live, and then stock photos of happy plumbers getting out of happy vans in indiscriminate location. That's doing nothing. Like, that's like 2010 stuff. Whereas if I see Paul and I know that this is Paul, this is what he'll look like, this is what he'll show up like, here's him.
Yes.
It's so much more authentic and powerful. And I actually think there's a weird undercurrent here of people just wanting to get back to the real world, sort of fatigue of what the internet might have brought. If you know what I mean, that's an ephemeral thing that I can't really grasp hold of, but that there is some sort of reaction and some requirement for local things, for local people. And a sort of, you know, pushing away a bit of the internet. So we've got to blend those two things. Use the internet, but be authentic and real and local and all of those things. Yeah.
And authentic, yeah.
Yep.
Let's move on. So now we'd be going into the slides. If I was back to my main table of contents, we'd be moving into the visual design bit here. So visual identity, creating an emotional connection is how I've done this. So I think you need your... Well, sorry, I did skip over that. I'll just go back a little bit on the voice, on the content and voice. Obviously, it's a good time at the very beginning to decide what types of content you might be putting out there, whether you will do blog posts, whether you'll have special landing pages that you'll need to make, whether you do social media directories, flyers, and all that kind of stuff. I think it's good to know the range of kind of written content that you're going to put out there. And also, this is a place where you would define, and again, this is another page area of writing guidelines, which would also do something which I've never done before, which would actually lay out some of your best practices for web copy. So it would be the same thing we showed last time, which would be that crib sheet, if you like, of things that you do. You write for skimmers and you, you know, you start with the important stuff and work down. But also it would include other things like meta description templates, you know, how you might mark up your images, what logic you use to do that, and that kind of stuff, you know. So we've talked about this on other shows there, where often there isn't a logic to how you might, when you're doing the website, write the descriptions or the title tags in a certain way. You know, it might be your business name and then about your business name and then contact, or it might be something else entirely. So setting these things up, I think, is good for before you build the website, because then you've got some consistency. And the same with, you know, with how you mark up your images, what rules you follow.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll
did you skip six out, by the way? I think you went from five there.
With content, and then we go into the next limit.
Oh, no, apologies. No, I think, so there you go, six.
No, there we go.
Okay, seven. All right.
I think this is moving on to the images. Oh, sorry, no. I did skip one, didn't I? What happened?
Yeah, six. Visual identity.
So moving into, so now we've assumed that we know the content we're writing, that we've got the rules on our content, we've got our voice that we're writing with. So then we're enhancing the web. We're starting with that semantic HTML effectively and then adding in. So I think the important thing about a visual identity is that it should be congruent with the brand's written voice and message. It needs to stick with that and not be... We should be choosing on what is objectively best representing the brand that we've defined to the users, rather than making it some subjective art project. And I think also when we're doing our visual identity, it's important to remember that when it comes to the web, not everybody is going to see what you see as well. So, you know, we're adding a layer of visuals to add to the written content. It shouldn't be as a replacement for it, because some people aren't going to see it. Screen readers, search bots obviously don't see the visuals. And increasingly, people have preferences where they may have high contrast themes on there, or they put it in reader mode, or they have a monochrome screen. So I think that all needs to be told to a client as well, so they understand what the visuals are doing. But then we would define things like our logo, you know, things that we would include in there, whether it's got a dark or light mode. We need to probably have a stacked and horizontal version of it. We need to probably have a favicon and maybe an open graph image as well that we're going to use as a format if we're going to put in things out that go into Facebook or Twitter or something like that. Not Twitter, X.
X.
So, I mean, that's where you would use it as a normal. So here, if I just go to that link there, I've already started to make some of his logos in the different formats here. And I'd do that on the whiteboard and then bring it over to here. So that would be available, you see, because then you can just download it from Canva and use it in your projects as you need it.
Yeah, so each of those little assets that we see, so the logo, the light version, the dark version, they within the Canva board, you could click on those and download them from the asset page and things like that, could you?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Right, wow, gosh, look at that.
Yeah, I need to go back to where we was here. So that was
we were on seven.
Okay, so we're moving on. Yes, we did that one. And then there's images. No. And me. Yeah, it was six, I think we were on before.
Yeah.
Oops, hold on. Let's keep moving there. Visual identity. Yeah, so logos are there, and then we'll pick our colors again. I'll have a format for this one, but we'll want to make sure that we're observing certain things, WCAG criteria on contrast ratios. In fact, I can do that, actually. I can just go here. But...
Oh, yeah, nice. Again, it just links to... Yeah, look at that.
Yeah. Roughly. So, I mean, this is still work to be done. So there's a format. So when you go to the next client, you can swap out the sort of way that you just change the colors over here so it would make it easier. But it just means that you... it's not so easy to navigate back because I'm not sure where I've clicked.
Number six, you were at, I think, six.
Yeah, we won that. So I was just showing how that's going, and typography is the same. You've set that out, and fonts, you would choose those. I've put that, and I think in style guides, they tend to put them in the same thing, but I think fonts, there's enough to write about the decision-making on fonts, whether you're using system fonts, you know, for performance, or whether you're going to use them, and where you're getting them from, and licenses and all that sort of stuff. So I've got a different section for those. Then the next is the slider, which is looking at images and media guidelines, where we want to set those up. And again, there are four overview units to this one. And this is about making content easy and enjoyable to consume. That's why we have media and images. So we'll set up, and again, these have their own pages, a photography style that we're going to use, whether there's a certain mood, whether certain subjects which we incorporate in our, which is pretty simple, I think, with a plumber. It's largely going to be them doing some plumbing. But whether we use any filter effects, in their case, they've got a standard rounding of the borders of the images.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So that's their format. We'd also discuss here as well image specifications. So the file format that we're going to use and the support that we're, because, you know, one might want to use WebP with a fallback of a JPEG or something, or we might just say, no, it's okay. The support for WebP is okay. So we would define that ahead of time and probably define what sort of aspect ratios we're going to have for different types of content, whether in certain situations we're using a square image, in other ones, whether we're using a sort of standard, 16:9 ratio. And again, audio and visuals with some things that would need to be considered there. Autoplay.
Yeah, Paul needs a podcast, I think, and a YouTube channel. Actually, Paul could probably do really well out of a YouTube channel, to be honest, but maybe not a podcast. Sorry.
Well, it was actually. And actually, on that first one-page site we built, there was a video which I borrowed from the web. So, yeah, there might be that. And icon systems as well. So there's a separate page for this where I can put in the notes where you can find lots of these icons. So you can define these ahead without kind of moving in, which is going to be your style and how you'll go about that. Now we'll move on to the next thing, which is still, I think, in the sort of range of the visuals. No, it's not. Sorry. It's into the sort of technology element of web components. And it's, you know, using the power of web conventions with this. I'll put some notes in here as well on this one. So, you know, shall I read this?
Yeah, you could, I guess.
Okay. Really, the point on the notes that go with this slider is the fact that the web is interactive, that we need to be able to tab, mouse click, finger tap to links and buttons. And we should, in the process of that, should be able to get visual feedback or audio feedback if you're somebody using a screen reader. And often these things are forgotten about. So this is a key thing to do, that visitors need to understand our UI. So conventions are our best friend. You know, there's a book, Don't Make Me Think, which very much says about the idea of just stick with what people understand. Keep it simple as you possibly can. Don't go and do crazy stuff. Do crazy stuff if you like. You might win some awards for doing it, but you're probably going to lose a load of visitors. So, you know, you need deep pockets if you want to experiment. I just put a bit in there about the fact that it's generally good to kind of test all of the components that you're adding and keep it simple as you go, because we're used to the fact that we can there are lots of design systems out there, but they do have a history of breaking conventions. So the classic one is removing link underlines, which is what Twitter's Bootstrap did for version 3. So millions of people there, basically those people who were relying only on color to see what will link. Many, many people were just excluded from the web on those sites because they can't see what's a link. And the same thing is even Google with its material design managed to replace input titles for placeholders on form inputs. So of course that causes a complete nightmare for someone trying to fill in a form. So my guidelines on this one, or something to remind ourselves, is that we want to test for ourselves anything that we're adding, which should encourage us not to add more stuff than we need to onto our website.
It's kind of interesting how this is useful to explain to the client, but also kind of useful as a mnemonic for yourself.
Yes.
These things need to be taken into account because it is easy to forget some of those bits and pieces. I mean, hopefully if you've been in this business for any length of time, they're a bit ingrained, but they may not be. It might be that some of those things do drop off the radar a little bit, and just having a mnemonic to say, wait, hang on, have a think.
Yes. Well, that's the idea with this. If you can put something ahead of this, it might solve some problems, because if it was the first chat you're having with somebody and you just go over, look, these are the kind of, this is better people than me who've worked out all this stuff about the web, who have these kind of principles, if you like, that we should work to, it heads it off. Because what's likely to happen is that if you don't say something about trying to keep things simple when it comes to these units and the fact that what you see on somebody else's website isn't necessarily good for your needs, you might cut down the people who just say, I want this navigation. So I think for Paul's site, when we go for the navigation to keep it really, really simple for him, we'll have instead of a really complex menu, we'll have a menu page, which will
Go
to.
Yep. Yep. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
These sort of things.
Really visual, easy to take in. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And makes it easier to maintain and stuff like that. And it's the same with sliders. You know, you take on, you know, what people need to be aware of is that you take on a whole bunch of responsibilities, which later you could get fined for, you know, because you haven't thought about those people who need to tap their way around the site or need it to feed back to them in an audio way because they use screen readers. So it's a way of just trying to, you know, add what's needed rather than what looks cool on another person's site.
Yeah.
So this would be web components where you decide the sort of things that you would need, whether you do need tooltips, whether you use details and summaries, as we will do that because there'll be a sort of frequently asked questions thing, and what our button stylings are. We'll have some animation guidelines where, again, we probably want to make sure we honor people's user preferences. If they hate it, then we're not going to show them animation, and we'll have some things on there, and we'll have some sort of spaces system that we would write down. So again, if I did the site in simple HTML and CSS, it might be useful for anybody who had to take over from me because I'm run down by a bus to know what system was used to create those spacing so they can apply the same. Let me move on. This is going on a bit. So let me move on to the next thing.
Did you miss out the SEO one?
SEO, yes, you're right. Mm-hmm. So next thing, again, SEO here. Now, this is where we might dig into it a little bit more. Most of this will be just reminder stuff. I mean, I've already got links to it. There'll be content strategy, how much you think that somebody is going to publish. I think in Paul's case, we would just have a few key articles that might help him rather than a blog.
Unless he's got the YouTube channel, in which case he's doing it all the time. But yeah, I think Paul, it's fairly unlikely that Paul's going to be producing a blog post, I doubt. Yeah.
I thought for Paul, what he might be useful for him, because he's a single person with his wife just taking the calls for him, emergency plumbing, which is popular, he might want to have an article which tells people that is it really an emergency? Do you need to pay more for me to be called out now? These are a few things you might be able to do, and then call me in the normal hours and save yourself some money. So you could have an article about that. Technical SEO. So that would be about structuring data schemas and stuff, what you're going to include on that. Page speed targets you might want to set, and indexing considerations, what kind of structure you're going to have, how much you're going to put in. We'll cover this later because I've actually done the work on Paul's. And there might be something as well about local SEO. So you'll cover here what would, you know, what would be the rules on setting up the Google business profile, which is probably going to get you most of your work, I think, as a local plumber, and whether you want to get into things like geolocation tagging. And again, we're back in with our EEAT.
EEAT. Yeah.
Yes. And things like that. And QR codes as well. You know, it might be something you want to set up. I mean, that became a big thing, didn't it? On your advertising elsewhere, you'd have a QR code to come to your website, whether they wanted the same. And then you move on to the next thing. So the next one would be applications. Again, there's just a section here where you might want a different page, which I've set up, where you would cover the sort of profile images and the sizes. And again, if you're doing the website, it's good to see how the same brand identity is going to go to different applications like social media. So you might have a different sizing of your photographs that you do there and different types of templates that you have. Again, the Google business profile, you might put some more details about what photos you're going to require for that. Email, again, it might be something that you set up that needs to be branded. And same with anything else, any directories or review listings or stuff. So they're on the separate page. And finally, I think on,
there's 13 as well. There's one more after this.
Yes, we've got testing and tracking, something I nearly forgot on this one. This would be setting up, again, how do we ethically measure success?
I want to forget this one. I'd love to live in a world where we didn't have to think about this one.
So, I mean, I've put down here, I think it's worth discussing this because this would be a sort of afterthought a lot of the time. So you would say whether you're going to do user testing. Now, I've actually put a little article in there once you go to this page, which actually gives you a how you can do the simplest of user testing, where you just get maybe 3 to 5 people. And you just go and ask them to do a few things and watch where their mouse goes and try and get some feedback. So I've got a whole setup for that. So that might be something that Paul might do, you know, if he can take 5 new customers or something who prepared to give him half an hour on a Zoom call or something like that.
He could love that.
And analytics, again, this is something that I would discuss at the beginning, if it's needed at all. And, you know, if you are and you want to look at your analytics and you think you're going to use those, are you going to go for something like, I don't think it's written plausible, it should be saying on there. Sorry, my...
I know what you meant.
Plausible Analytics, I think it's called, is the privacy first, no cookies tool. Or you've got Google Analytics, where if you're in Europe, you might have to be wary about using it anyway. Certainly, if you are, you would need to make sure that you've got a pop-up form that comes up on your website and says, I consent to my data going off to Google and going off to the US. So all those sort of things. And I think this testing and tracking is a good conversation to be having early. What's your privacy policies? What's your stance on cookies, use of dark patterns, whether you're against this, whether you are or not going to have things like tracking, hidden tracking pixels, or whether you use, which I did for some time, some session replay tools, Microsoft Clarity.
Yeah, I tried that until I realized that I never, ever looked at them. So it was obviously pointless, but yeah.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's what I found. I think pretty much everybody I used to set up with analytics, but I think there would be only a handful out of, you know, well over 100 clients that I know of. There'd only be maybe about 5 of them who ever really did look at their analytics.
Yeah.
And when they did, it was only for a certain period of time, and then it would be left for years again.
Yeah. So somebody got a memo that they needed to give a presentation to the board and analytics. So suddenly, let's analyze the analytics, and off they go.
And there are other ways of doing that, which I hope to cover. I mean, we'll go on forever if I cover all of the slides in this, but in that you would put the alternatives in there, because, you know, at the end of the day, you can get quite a lot of information by just measuring what comes into you and measuring what you can already sign up to. If you're Google Search Console or Bing, it will tell you a lot of information about the traffic anyway, because most people are signed up to it. And finally, the last section would be in this higher level would be governance, who's responsible for what. And this would cover sort of levels of permissions that anybody would have to, say, a CMS if it was a WordPress site on this one, or to GitHub or GitLab if it's something which I'd probably be doing these days, how they might have access even to this guide as well. So who would have that?
Okay.
Review schedules, there may be not one at all, but it's worth thinking about how often you're going to review whether your site needs an update in some form or another, and what you're going to audit. You're going to look at one of the things you might be looking at, which is non-intrusive. You might be looking at where your keywords are positioned. There's tools, plenty of those, where you can say, I'm trying to rank for Lincolnshire Plumbing. Let's see how we rank. And you might want to check those every so often. And then there's the legal things. Again, a page for that, which really just needs to reinforce what laws you need to follow for where your website is and the size of your business, you know, in terms of accessibility and GDPR.
Okay.
And finally, there's just a couple of things on this slide, which would have their own slides, which is changelog, you know, who's tracking what and how. And then a decision framework would be the last thing about, well, what's not covered in these guidelines and what happens if someone gets hit by a bus, which is kind of my thing at the moment.
Yeah, you can keep referring to the bus. Poor.
Yeah.
Poor David.
I know. I'm kind of well in my 60s now, and I've already
said it may not be a bus. It could be something else.
Exactly. So, yeah. And I think it's always forgotten about. I mean, I think certainly who updates what is one. And one of the biggest hassles with my, you know, I set up this site for somebody. I think I'm in charge of it because my job is to do the updating and to make sure that their software is running. But we've never really finalized that conversation, who's responsible. So I'm really surprised when they give access to somebody who's able to change my plugins and do stuff.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's a good idea to get that written down then. Nice.
Yeah. So that's the idea. I don't know if this has done a very good job. I'm sure it's probably painful for anyone listening to this, but I'll put a link to what I'm working on, and you'll see how this keeps changing over time. But yes, there are about
50-odd pages, and obviously each of those table of contents pages that we've just spent the time looking at, I think there were 14 of them or something like that. 13 of them. They link to subsequent pages, which make 50 in total. I would definitely go and have a look at it. And we said that the links would be buried in the YouTube comments. And I'll just pop it on the screen. Sorry, David, it looks like you wanted to say something then.
I'll just put the link to where we'll put this on our website. And in our website, I'll put a link to this. So, yeah.
I'll just quickly do this because I might as well. So the website itself, which we've mentioned, is on the screen the entire time, but I'll do it anyway. So it's noscript.show. The YouTube channel is that, but that kind of feels superfluous because presumably if you're watching this, you've already discovered that. So anyway, and this episode will be found here, noscript.show/229. And yeah, that's a body of work you got there, David. You've been really busy. Let's hope you get some feedback about it. Let's hope people drop into
It would be nice. We don't generally get anything here, but it was just nice to just get your initial feedback on it anyway, just to see if it's a big thing, but the idea is to sort of keep it you know, at a level where you could cover the 10 slides, if you like, the main elements with a client and give them an overview without but as you want to dig into each thing, then you can get more specific with some notes. And for me, it's a place to store everything that I've been learning all this time, because it always comes up, you know, every time you go to a new website and that, and you're thinking, oh, what was that site where they had all the collection of all the icons that you can get for free out there?
Yeah.
Where have I kept that? So the idea is to have this one central hub.
Yeah. Some Google Drive folder or some deleted folder, which is on a backup disk somewhere. I get it. That's amazing. I really am totally blown away by the amount of work you've done there. So one last time, noscript.show/2929 if you want to find out more. Is that it? Are we done for that one then?
I think we are done, yeah. Okay. And I don't know when we'll be next on or what we'll be doing because, well, a month today, we should be together.
Yeah, you might be able to do it with one camera. That'd be fun. Assuming I can actually get to India. We'll wait and see on that. But yeah, in which case I will bid you adieu, and I will we'll be back soon at some point. Take care.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.